this Sunday at the Royal Rumble. It's going to be the end of the world as you know it.
Listening to Smack Talk Radio Live, your source for news, views, and opinions on everything wrestling, from the big leagues to the local scene. Now, here's James McDonald and Corey Callahan.
Well, it's finally here. What could arguably be the most exciting pay-per-view of the year, the Royal Rumble is days away, and it's go-home week heading into the big show. Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of Smack Talk Radio Live, and we're broadcasting to you from the Smack Talk Studios in Vancouver, BC. I'm Corey Callahan, joined alongside James McDonald, and James, I have to ask, have you been crossing out the days on your calendar en route to this Sunday?
Well, Corey, I wouldn't exactly say I'm crossing the days off, but I'm definitely looking forward to this Sunday to see just what twists and turns the WWE has in store for us. I mean, who will win the Rumble match? Will there be any surprise entrants like Nash and Booker T last year? We'll be going over the entire Rumble card tonight in our Tale of the Tape, as well as bringing you a special interview with ex-WWF star David Heath, better known to the wrestling world as Gangrel the Vampire Warrior.
Of course, we're catching you up with all the latest in our post-to-post report, and in tonight's local wrestling scene, we're having a conversation with Mike Patenaude, Secretary Treasurer of the Vancouver Athletic Commission, and we're going to get the lowdown on WWE's recent show in Vancouver, and just what is the relationship with the WWE and Vancouver these days. As always, you can check out www.smacktalkradiolive.com or join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio.
Right now, though, let's toss you over the top rope with the Tale of the Tape.
It's time for the Tale of the Tape.
It's Thursday evening, Smack Talk Radio Live, back on the air. James, as always, how you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing good, buddy. How about yourself?
It's been a long, long week. In fact, it's been a really long month.
Yeah, you've been really working your butt off lately, haven't you?
In the month of January, I think I've maybe had 1 or 2 days off so far.
Ouch.
And those days off are really not even days off because I'm catching up on my personal life.
Few and far between, eh?
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to bring up and let everyone know about is I've been working this Women's Olympic qualifying soccer that's happening
at
BC
Place. Oh, the CONCACAF thing that's happening at BC Place, right?
Yeah, it's been very interesting. It's been a lot of work, but it's been very interesting because, I mean, all these teams from all over the world have been coming to Vancouver and they've been playing soccer all week, and we're finally heading into the big weekend. Of course, I'm working on the broadcast crew, and the soccer hasn't been great. But this weekend should be much better as we head into the semifinals. The top two teams make it onto the Olympics, and as expected, it is probably going to be the United States and Canada that move on. But there's quite a separation with some of the teams. Like comparing Cuba to the United States they're not even on the same level.
I've been kind of following the scores of this tournament too, and it seems to me there is quite a disparity in skill between some of the teams. Like there's been some real blowouts in this tournament.
Well, like the United States have been winning 14-0, 13-0.
In soccer, that's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And Canada's winning 6-0. So it's been very interesting. But one of the things I thought was even more interesting was the fact that Cuba had come to Vancouver to play in this tournament, and they played 2 games, and on their 3rd game, 2 of their best players actually disappeared from the hotel, and they have defected to the United States.
What?
They left the team, they skipped the game.
You're kidding me.
And they made a run to the border, and they are now in Miami.
That...
I know.
What do I say to that?
Crazy.
Like, that is crazy.
The Castro family wouldn't be too happy about that, I don't think.
Well, it's going to be an exciting weekend wrestling-wise. I mean, we got the big ECW show on Friday night, Clash of the Titans. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, on Sunday, we've got the big pay-per-view, Royal Rumble. Now, Are you going to be working on Sunday? Are you going to be able to catch the Rumble?
Unfortunately, I am working the soccer event on Sunday because that is when the finals. So I am not able to watch the Royal Rumble live this year, which is a real shame because I usually have a Royal Rumble party at the house and I'm not going to be able to do it.
Jeez.
Oh, well. I'll have to watch it later.
That's what the internet's for.
Oh, wow. All right. So before we get going, let me just remind everyone just where exactly you find our show. And that's at www.smacktalkradiolive.com. Or, of course, you can join in on facebook.com/smacktalkradio. And one of the things I wanted to bring up, James, was the fact that we are on a whole new technical system for broadcasting this show. So tonight is a bit of a testing ground because the show could sound great or it could sound terrible. There could be mistakes along the way. This is the first week we've ever used this new radio show setup. So it's been a lot of work crossing over from my original system to here to now.
Yeah.
But here we are and we're on the air.
Preparing for the worst but hoping for the best type thing.
Now, what are your thoughts, just initially, off the top of your head, of the Royal Rumble pay-per-view coming up this Sunday?
Actually, I'm quite excited for it. I mean, as far as the actual Rumble match itself goes, there's pretty much two or three favorites that are been picked out to win the match, and we'll go over that here in a second. Mm-hmm. But no, I'm definitely excited. I mean, every year the Rumble match, I mean, everybody's excited for it. It's just
I was just gonna say the one thing that really the kind of thing that's bothering me about the Royal Rumble this year is. I am more excited for the fact that it is the Royal Rumble and not the current storylines that are taking place. I'm actually banking on the fact that this pay-per-view will be good simply because it's the Royal Rumble and the name itself should make it a good pay-per-view.
Oh, the Royal Rumble generates good numbers every year.
But everything I've seen up until this point hasn't been that great. Like the lead-in going into this Sunday hasn't been that great in my opinion.
Do you mean the build-up towards the actual Rumble match or the programs that are following the Rumble match?
Well, I find that they've actually almost completely ignored the Rumble match on television. I think that they have done a poor job of actually promoting the 30-man Battle Royal itself.
You think so?
I do. Typically, as we head into the Royal Rumble match, you have guys that will actually, claim their stake as to why they are going to win the Royal Rumble and why they're going to outlast the other 29 guys.
Yeah,
I haven't really seen that.
Yeah, I do agree with you there. You really haven't seen. But how do you really build up the Rumble match? I mean,
well, like I said, you get guys, you give them 5 minutes or you give them 2 minutes and you make them cut a promo as to why they think they're going to win the Royal Rumble. You know, a little later on in the show, you have another guy and he claims his reason why he's going to win the Royal Rumble. You make the fans believe that each person has an equal opportunity at winning the Royal Rumble.
So do you think they should go back to something like they had in the early 90s where they'd have all the different superstars cutting a promo saying why they're going to win the Rumble?
It doesn't have to be as cheesy as that, but
I kind of like that. To me, that built up the match for me.
At least it's something. I mean, yeah. I just feel like they've talked about all these other matches around the actual Rumble match, and they haven't actually addressed the 30-man match itself, which maybe that's a good idea because they know that the Rumble match is going to sell itself anyways and they need to build up the other matches. I mean, you could go either way on it, but I'm just saying I feel like they haven't really talked enough about the actual Rumble match. That's just my opinion.
Okay.
But let's get into the 2012. It's the 25th anniversary this year as well. The 25th anniversary, 2012 Royal Rumble.
It's anticipation of the amazing.
Edge is going to WrestleMania!
Unvarying in unpredictability and the epitome of excitement.
Welcome to the Royal Rumble!
For a quarter century, it has shown us how to defy the odds. 30 superstars, one winner. A main event championship opportunity at WrestleMania 28 awaits. On the 25th anniversary of the Royal Rumble match, the numbers tell the story.
Well, Corey, I got to correct you there. It's actually not the 25th anniversary. It's the 24th anniversary because it's the actual 25th Royal Rumble match. See, WWE is weird. I mean, they did that with WrestleMania.
They've been promoting it as the 25th.
I know. It's weird. It's not actually the 25th. It'd be considered the 24th anniversary because it's, can you kind of see what I'm saying? Well, for example, the first anniversary of something is year after the inaugural event, right?
Okay. So you're going to get all official.
I'm going to get all technical with you.
Wow. All right. Okay, well.
Well, it's not your fault. It's the WWE's fault. I mean, they're the ones that promote it that way when really it's not correct, right?
Yeah. So. Well, the Royal Rumble, James, why don't you get into it?
Well, of course, I mean, everybody highlighting this year's Royal Rumble pay-per-view is the 30-man over-the-top rope battle royal. And this year, they've gone back to the 30-man format instead of the 40-man format.
Which
they
I think
last
is a good
year.
Idea.
Do you? I kind of like that, too. It keeps with tradition, right? You got to keep some traditions alive.
I'm fine with the one-year spinoff, but, you know, I didn't think that they should make it a regular thing.
Yeah. So. Also this year, something interesting that they've announced is that anybody at all is eligible for the Royal Rumble match. Now, to me, I take that as meaning that the guys like John Cena and Kane and Ziggler and Punk, maybe they'll come into the Royal Rumble match as well after having their match, their singles match, right?
Yeah, there's always those possibilities.
So, anyways, I've made up a little list of guys that I think are going to be confirmed participants into the match. We'll start off with, I mean, some of the easy guys that we know, guys like Chris Jericho. We have Mick Foley. We have The Miz. R-Truth. We have Sheamus. Wade Barrett, Randy Orton, Santino Marella, Cody Rhodes, Jack Swagger, Brodus Clay, Kofi Kingston, Heath Slater, Jinder Mahal, Drew McIntyre, Ezekiel Jackson, Tyson Kidd, Justin Gabriel, and David Otunga. Those are pretty much the guys that I think we are for sure going to see in this match.
Now, they haven't officially announced those entrants, right? Those are just those are guys you are thinking are going to be in.
Some of them they have officially announced, like R-Truth and The Miz, obviously, Sheamus, Wade Barrett, Chris Jericho, Mick Foley. These are guys that, yes, they have on TV actually announced are going to be into the match. But other guys like, I mean, Heath Slater and Drew McIntyre, Ezekiel Jackson, for example, I mean, these are the lower card guys that are probably just going to be, because you need filler for this match. You need 30 guys, right?
The one thing I did notice as well this year that they have done, that they've done differently is they haven't really announced many official entrants. I remember last year heading into the Royal Rumble, I think they had announced like 27
of the 40. They had announced like 75% of who the entrants were going to be.
And I that list that you just named off, I'm not sure how many are official or not. I haven't actually taken the notes, but, I just feel like they've by saying every wrestler is eligible to enter, I mean, the door is wide open.
Oh,
I mean,
totally.
It's not even just the active roster. It could be these wrestlers that are, or it could be the legends that are going to be in the
Legends
House.
Exactly, that could leave the door open for legends. It could leave the door open for somebody who we never even thought we'd see.
I'm sure we'll probably see a couple NXT guys in there. I wouldn't be surprised if that happened. The 30 guys, man.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, we could also see guys that are absent or injured right now. I mean, guys like Christian, guys like Rey Mysterio. How about Alberto Del Rio making a surprise return?
And then, of course, you have The Undertaker, you know, Goldust.
Undertaker, just stopping you on that point. I think the Rumble match would be a perfect opportunity to reintroduce Undertaker.
I'm going
to
get back into all these. I'm going to, you know, dissect certain wrestlers here in a second. But, you know, you have Goldust, Triple H. Of course, you have the injured Zack Ryder, Hornswoggle, which... Ugh.
God, no, please.
You could also see the return of Karma at
Wouldn't
this point.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
I don't think that's far-fetched. You're the first person to hear to say that.
No, I don't think that's far-fetched at all.
That would be an excellent way to return.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, far-fetched, but you had mentioned to me earlier that Rob Van Dam might be
possibility. Well, yeah, you know what? That's another interesting one, Corey. I mean, his contract with TNA just ended, and they just recently wrote him off television, like taking him out on a stretcher with this big injury angle. So, definitely Rob Van Dam, I think, is a possibility for a surprise
entrance.
I don't
really want to see him back in the WWE. I'm kind of over him.
He's, you know what? I got to say, Rob Van Dam, he's really gotten a lot. His age, I think, is starting to catch up to him. He's a lot slower and a lot.
You notice it. When you watch TNA, you notice it.
You really do.
Okay, I want to talk about, let's get into certain wrestlers who we really think have a good chance here. Number one, off the top of my head, I mean, this was your pick a few weeks ago when we talked about
And it seems to be the popular pick all over the internet.
Mm-hmm. Chris Jericho.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, what do you think his chances are of winning this thing, and why would they go this direction?
Well, to me, the reason that they'd give Chris Jericho the win in the Rumble match would be twofold. Number one, it would set up this dream match between him and CM Punk, assuming Punk, of course, beats Ziggler.
Yeah.
I mean, that would set up that match at WrestleMania. And number two, it'd just be like a feather in his cap that they've given to guys like Undertaker and Edge in the past, right?
Yeah.
It'd just be that one little extra accolade that Chris Jericho could say that he has, I could see them doing that.
So obviously the idea is that Jericho versus Punk at WrestleMania.
But that's the big one, and that's the big one that everybody thinks, I think, is. And I'd like to see that too.
Yeah, and of course the only words Chris Jericho has spoke since his return, he said on Monday night, he said it's the end of the world as we know it, or as you know it, I guess he said. You know, that's a powerful statement.
That's a very powerful statement.
So I think he would be the obvious choice at this point. And we know how the WWE works when it's an obvious choice. They usually tend to go into a different
so
direction.
So that tells me that he's not going to win the Rumble, because we all want him to and we all think he's going to. Yeah. That means he's not going to win the Rumble.
But that's the beautiful thing about the Royal Rumble, is that it really is anything. All bets are off. I mean, what you think is going to happen probably isn't going to happen.
But you see, like, take last year, for example. Last year, a lot of people thought Alberto Del Rio was going to win the Rumble, and he actually ended up going on and winning it, right?
Yeah. I think that they are setting it up for Jericho to win. I hope. I've heard some other things on the internet of people saying that, you know, you could have the 28th and the 29th competitor in the ring. Those two are wrestling each other. They both eliminate themselves. All of a sudden, the 30th entrant is Chris Jericho. He walks out. He doesn't even have to wrestle. Like, he hasn't yet, you know what I mean? He doesn't even have to wrestle anyone, and he wins the Rumble.
That would be something definitely original, just to have the 30th guy come out by himself, and everybody else is eliminated at that point.
Would you be disappointed if that happened?
A little bit, to be honest, because to me, that seems kind of like a cheesy finish.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
That does seem kind of like a cheesy... It would work for what Chris Jericho is doing right now, don't get me wrong, but... Yeah, it would kind of leave a bad taste in my mouth as far as the Rumble match itself goes.
But if there was ever a year to do it, this would be the year to do it. All right. Well, what about someone like The Miz?
The Miz? Mm-hmm. Well, The Miz is entering at number one. You know that, right?
Yeah. That was confirmed on Raw.
That was confirmed.
As he lost
and,
R-Truth.
Yeah. And I cannot see The Miz being the third guy to go from number one all the way to the finish. I don't see it happening.
No?
No, not with The Miz.
Miz isn't going to get the big giant push heading into
WrestleMania. I could see R-Truth coming out second, though, and then him and R-Truth battling for a little bit. Now, what about Randy Orton? Another guy that's been touted as a heavy favorite for the Rumble match.
Well, he was my
Orton.
Early pick, because here's the thing about Randy Orton. He needs something heading into WrestleMania if he's going to be part of the show, because I just feel like all headway with Randy Orton has been lost. Like, I just feel like he's gone a bit stale. I'm not denying his wrestling ability. I still think Randy Orton can put on some of the best wrestling matches out there. But I just feel that he needs something to spark the flame in his character again, because I just feel that I'm just not as excited about Randy Orton as I once was. And that doesn't mean I want to see him off television. I'm just saying he needs something. So would I like to see him win the Royal Rumble?
It is in his hometown as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I could see him winning it, because this is the spark that he needs to get himself back into the spotlight at WrestleMania. Now, who he faces at WrestleMania, I don't know. I haven't really put that much thought into it, but I feel like he needs something to spark him, and this would be an excellent opportunity.
Well,
to do that.
He's been doing a good job of raising the mid-card talent that the WWE's had this year, I think, anyways. Like, I think he's really made Wade Barrett come into his own with this little program that they had before he got injured. Mm-hmm. Now, there's also a lot of talk that he's coming back early from injury, so...
Well, yeah. I mean, because apparently his injury wasn't as bad as they originally thought. I mean, it was a herniated disc.
That's pretty...
It is pretty bad, but apparently he feels quite fine, so... it's not... Usually you're out for much longer than what they're anticipating he's going to be out for.
Right.
So, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe you don't even see him at the
Royal
Rumble.
I don't know. To me, Corey, I just think that'd be a shame to have Randy Orton come in, win the Rumble match, and then aggravate his injury, and then he's not able to wrestle at WrestleMania. That would just throw a huge monkey wrench in everything, and that caused some major rewrites.
Mm-hmm. So, now, what about Cody Rhodes?
Cody Rhodes? I think we're going to see a real strong showing from Cody Rhodes, but I think with Cody Rhodes, we're going to see Goldust as one of the surprise entrants, because... That will start building up their program heading into WrestleMania. And actually, that brings me to another point, talking about, say, like, maybe some legends that are going to enter into the Royal Rumble. Maybe we see Dusty Rhodes come out and enter the Rumble.
Yeah.
And kind of maybe try to play peacemaker between Cody Rhodes and Goldust. And then maybe Cody Rhodes eliminates his father, and then Goldust eliminates Cody Rhodes or something. You know, something along those lines to get the program going, right?
So I'm hearing that they actually may consider having Cody Rhodes versus Goldust at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view and not at WrestleMania.
Really?
See, that's
I don't agree with that. That's a WrestleMania match, in my opinion. Brother versus brother, you know, title versus career, which is what the rumors is.
But then you could argue that they wouldn't want to have that match at WrestleMania, because they quite possibly want to have Cody Rhodes do something larger at WrestleMania.
Like what?
Well, who knows? But maybe they don't want to put him up against Goldust because they have bigger plans for him.
That's a possibility. But honestly, just between you and me, I'd love, you know, Cody Rhodes and Goldust. To me, that's a WrestleMania match.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's a match that I want to see going to Miami, right? Yeah. So,
Here's an underdog which has a very good chance at winning the Royal Rumble. And I would think you would agree with me on this one. But what are your thoughts on Sheamus actually pulling off the victory?
You know what? I could honestly see it. Mm-hmm. You know, because that would raise Sheamus to the next level and make him and put him up there as a true main eventer, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Will we see it happen? I don't know. I think some of the other guys are a little bit stronger than Sheamus, but I think we're definitely going to see a strong showing from Sheamus. Him and Wade Barrett. Those are the two guys I think we're going to really see a strong showing from in the Rumble match this year. I don't think personally they're going to win it, but I think we're going to see a strong showing from them. They'll probably enter early and then, you know, last a long time.
Now, who is your pick to win the Royal Rumble who no one would guess? I mean, like, obviously, it would be so far-fetched that this person would actually win the Royal Rumble. But if you were to pick that one person who could actually pull it off, who would it be?
The one person who could pull it off. The long shot, eh? Oh, that's a tough one. Who do you pick for that?
I mean,
one?
You got to consider last
year. You know what?
Year,
my long shot pick to win the Royal Rumble is going to be R-Truth.
Really?
That's my long shot pick, yes.
I'm going with Heath Slater.
Wow.
I'm joking.
Thank you. I was just about to say I lost all respect for you there, but
no, I'm just totally joking.
No, yeah, definitely R-Truth is my long shot pick.
Yeah.
So.
I think my long shot pick would be Wade Barrett. And even though he is a bit of a favorite, I don't see why people are putting him as a favorite. He's not a favorite. Why would he be a favorite? He hasn't done anything to deserve to be a favorite at this point. I mean, to me, he's still a long shot. I think that he is someone that could win the Royal Rumble, and you could put him back in that spotlight. I think they should have never taken him out of the spotlight when he was the leader of Nexus. I mean, he really proved that he can compete with anyone up there. So this is also a match that could propel Wade Barrett into the spotlight.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be headlining WrestleMania? No.
No, but I have to agree with you there, Corey. I think Wade Barrett is definitely one of those guys that's on the cusp to main event status.
Mm-hmm.
And a strong showing in the Rumble, I think, will do a lot to push him there, right?
Okay, well, this is actually a good time to talk about just what exactly our poll question is for today.
The poll question. Log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote.
All right, the Smack Talk Radio Live poll question for this week. It's a pretty simple one, James.
Very easy.
Who do you think is winning the Royal Rumble this year? We have a plethora of options. They are Chris Jericho, Randy Orton, Dolph Ziggler, Funkasaurus, Brodus Clay, Wade Barrett, Sheamus, or the ever-so-popular None of the Above. Log on to facebook.com/smacktalkradio and cast your vote. Now, James, I'm going to ask you a couple questions here. Not who you think is going to win the Royal Rumble, but who do you think has the most eliminations at this year's Royal Rumble?
The most eliminations? Ooh, that's a good one. You know what? I'm gonna go out and say Brodus Clay.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm going to say Brodus Clay is going to have a real strong showing in the Rumble. He's probably going to eliminate maybe 5-6 guys, and that'll probably be the tops for one person, I think, in this year's Rumble. But yeah, I could see Brodus Clay being the guy who has a really strong showing and being the one that, you know, you need multiple guys to eliminate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, who has the comedic exit out of the Royal Rumble? Who is the guy that just comes in and gets eliminated in the most hilarious fashion?
Comes in and gets eliminated. Was Kurt Hawkins one of our choices there on the list?
No, he wasn't. Should we have put him on there?
Well, maybe he'll be the comedic elimination, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could argue that Santino, but the thing is last year at Royal Rumble, Santino was actually, he almost won it.
No, I think we're going to see, again, I think we're going to see a decent showing from Santino Marella this year. Now, before we move on here, Corey, the last thing I want to talk about with the actual Rumble match is, do you think that the winner of the Rumble match is going to have any significance? Because, I mean, you look at last year, Alberto Del Rio, he won the Rumble. But yet he was opening match at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a factoid that I don't know if you know or not, Corey, but from 2005 until 2010, the person who came in second in the Royal Rumble actually went on to WrestleMania and had a title match anyways. So
give me an example, sorry.
An example? Shawn Michaels in 2007.
Oh, okay.
Triple H in 2008.
Oh, I see.
From 2005 until 2010, second place guy went on and had a title match anyway. So to me, that kind of takes away a little bit from the significance of winning the Rumble match. What do you think?
Well, what I think about the Royal Rumble is that I hate how they advertise that the winner gets a main event shot anyways, because this year they're not getting a main event shot. The main event of WrestleMania is John Cena versus The Rock. I've noticed they're kind of changing the wording to saying headlining WrestleMania.
Because they've kind of, like, again, like we said on past episodes, they've really kind of put themselves into a corner with this Rock Cena thing.
Yeah, but exactly. It's not the main event, so they should stop saying that.
No.
I mean, they could argue that it's the co-main event, but it's not even that. I mean, there's one main event this year, and that's Rock versus Cena. The Royal Rumble is not about the actual match at WrestleMania. It's about what comes with winning the Royal Rumble, mm-hmm. and that's a big deal in wrestling. Yeah. Absolutely. So the Royal Rumble has importance, and I'm definitely, I'm all for it, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Oh, I'm totally excited.
I don't know why I'm excited, but I'm just excited because it's the one pay-per-view of the year where anything can happen,
mm-hmm.
and it's probably the most unpredictable pay-per-view, and I really hope they deliver in that department because I want to see something that I didn't think was going to happen. I don't want to come back on this show next week and say I called it from square one. You know what I mean? And that's the problem I would have with Chris Jericho winning. It almost seems too obvious that he is going to win it.
Mm-hmm.
So I really hope they don't go that route.
Oh, no, I'm very interested to see what they're going to do on Sunday.
Now, how about surprise entrance, James? Like, you know, long shots. The guys that, they always save a few spots for people that you'd never expect to see. You know, who do you think we're going to see?
Well, could you imagine seeing The Rock as one of the surprise entrants?
I think that would be a terrible, terrible idea if they did that.
Do you?
Yes, absolutely. Do not put him back in the ring again. I didn't even want to see him in the ring at Survivor Series. You know, I'd be fine with him coming out during the Kane and Cena match. But don't have him in the Royal Rumble. That's just my opinion.
Really? What if Cena's in the Rumble and then The Rock makes a surprise entrance and eliminates Cena?
Well, I don't think Cena's going to be in the Royal Rumble.
You don't?
Well, no, I don't think so. I hope not. He doesn't need to be there. There's no reason for Cena to have a match and be in the Royal Rumble and then, you know, have him last until the end. Because Cena's not, if he's in the Royal Rumble, he's going to be up there until the end. He's not going to be an early exit.
Mm.
So I don't want to, enough Cena. You've already got the main event at WrestleMania. Just go with that.
Yeah.
You don't need to take the spotlight away
Somebody else a bone.
Yeah,
jeez.
You don't need to do that.
So,
I mean, one other super long shot of someone we could see at the Royal Rumble, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, that's actually a rumor that's been flying all over the internet lately is Lesnar making a surprise return. And you know what? I'd be really happy to see that. I mean, I've always been a Brock Lesnar fan, and to see him return at the Rumble, that would just totally make it for me.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't think he's coming back
yet. I don't either, but if he did, I mean, that would be on par with John Cena's surprise entrance back in 2008.
Excuse me. Now, does The Undertaker start his road to WrestleMania this Sunday?
Well, it'd be the perfect opportunity, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're ever going to bring The Undertaker back in, I mean, the Royal Rumble match at this point is the absolute perfect opportunity.
I'm pretty sure last year The Undertaker made his return at the Monday Night Raw after the Royal Rumble. If memory stands correct.
They did that video vignette thing that everybody thought was Sting,
right? Oh, that's
right.
And then he came back and then they had the silent promo with
Triple H.
Yeah,
right.
That wasn't the night after the Royal Rumble.
I don't think so. I can't remember, honestly,
wasn't.
Right now. I know somebody out there will correct us, but...
Yeah. Okay, well, should we move on?
Let's talk about some of the programs that are going on here. Some of the matches other than the Rumble match.
Because there is more than just the
30-man.
There
is more than just the 30-man over the top rope battle royal.
People seem to forget that. All right, well, why don't we start off by talking about the ever so popular storyline with the adults, Kane versus John Cena.
And all of this to get to Cena, it's almost like Ryder's some sacrificial lamb or something here tonight. He sent a message to Cena. Look at Ryder trying to fight back into this thing with one right hand. I mean, it's just too much to ask for. The abuse, the punishment that Zack Ryder has taken on this problem.
Oh my God!
Through the stage!
So, Kane and Cena going head-to-head at the Royal Rumble.
This is such a terrible, terrible program in my opinion.
Well, first of all, what were your thoughts on what you witnessed on Monday Night Raw?
Oh, dude, do you want me to start with the Cena angry face? No, I mean...
That was entertaining.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible. I mean... Give me a break, Cena. Come on now.
You didn't like the stare down into the television sets?
This program has had some of the absolute worst acting I've ever seen in my history of watching professional wrestling. Mm. I mean, both Eve and John Cena are, I think, competing with each other to see who can act worse, you know?
It's so terrible. Oh. Like, Eve Torres is beyond bad, and Cena was just, like, equally as bad.
Like, they just... you don't believe the emotion. That's, you know, this is supposed to be a heavily emotional program. You can tell.
Yeah.
But it's just not being conveyed that way by these two. And it's...
No, and it comes down to their acting abilities. Yeah. And I find that everyone in this department has, or everyone in this storyline has lost it in that department. It's just been terrible. Eve Torres was making me cringe. Like, she is so bad at acting. It's unbelievable. And John Cena, like, the way he was standing on the stage as he was looking down at Zack Ryder, who had gone through the entranceway there. I mean, that was just terrible.
No.
He's just standing there like he didn't know what to do. And I thought that whole spot with Kane chokeslamming Zack Ryder through that, it was just beyond bad. It was equally as bad as when he chokeslammed Zack Ryder off the loading bay ramp onto the stack of pallets. And personally, that's why I think they did this spot, was because they realized that chokeslam onto the pallets looked terrible. If remember when we were talking about that.
He bounced so high. It was unbelievable.
So they needed to do something all over again. So they're like, well, where can we chokeslam him this week? All right, let's use the entranceway there.
Let's make a fake floor here.
And that was the other thing. It just looked fake. Like, the way the stage collapsed in. And then did you notice that they had all this black... black bunting around, you couldn't see underneath the stage.
Yeah,
like when the floor goes down, you just have black bunting
just there. All around in that one particular spot.
Yeah,
it's definitely no Foley and Terry Funk flying into the garbage dumpsters. That's for sure.
Like nothing looks spontaneous anymore. Like it's just like, okay, well, we're going to put him through the stage, let's make it look as professional as possible.
The problem is, it just looks so set up.
Exactly. You know? That's what I'm getting at.
And I know I'm supposed to suspend my disbelief when watching wrestling, but, I mean, I have a limit, you know? You can only do so much.
I know. And right? part of the attraction to wrestling in the 90s was, you know, you're seeing stuff that, like, makes people go, like, oh, my God, like, that just happened? Like, he threw him off the stage? Like,
the stunts were just a little bit more real, you know?
Yeah. And now they're just so planned out that you notice it.
Yeah.
I notice it big time. I can't be the only one.
No, I totally agree with you there.
I don't know.
Like, all right, well, let's break down this program. Let's talk about how it's come to this point, shall we?
Mm.
So anyways, I guess as you know, a few weeks ago, Kane returned. He had a new look and a new mask. And he came out, interrupted John Cena in his match with Mark Henry, came and gave John Cena a chokeslam, even leaving Mark Henry alone, even though it was Mark Henry that had injured Kane off of television months earlier back in the summertime. So that was, you know, people were asking questions about that.
Yeah.
Now, next week, Cena kind of thought it was a case of misunderstanding, you know, just being in the wrong place at the wrong time, maybe. But then Kane would continue attacking Cena, and he would reveal that he was trying to make Cena embrace the hate from all the fans that, you know, continually boo Cena wherever they go, right? Gets boos everywhere. Now, when Cena refused to embrace the hate, Kane would then turn his attention to his buddy Zack Ryder. I mean, with beautiful spots such as trying to pull him under the ring, you know, attacking him as he was leaving with his kayfabe girlfriend Eve. You know, of course, we have the choke slam off the loading dock onto the mattress, I mean, pallets spot.
Yeah.
And... And then, the next week on Raw, John Laurinaitis, the GM, he then put an injured Zack Ryder into a match with Jack Swagger without the proper medical clearance. And this would cause Zack Ryder to lose his U.S. title after being gut-wrenched powerbombed three times by Swagger, which was kind of blah.
Yeah.
But anyways, after making the match then between him and Kane for the Royal Rumble, this is on the same Raw, Laurinaitis would then give Cena a match with Swagger that very same night, and Cena would then go out and proceed to lay a beating to Jack Swagger. And then, of course, as this is happening, Kane would come onto the Titantron and be all happy that Cena was starting to embrace the hate. See, this is the whole program is centered around this embrace the hate thing.
Well, they're making people think that maybe John Cena is turning heel.
That's it, exactly. They're teasing this whole Cena heel turn thing with this whole program, right? So. And then anyways, on Raw last week, Ryder was then put into a false count anywhere match against Kane, where Ryder actually asked Cena not to come out to the ring and help him. And the stipulation was that if Cena got involved, Ryder would then forfeit his rematch clause for the U.S. title, which kind of didn't make any sense to me. Like, you know, if I get involved, you don't get a rematch clause. It didn't make sense to me personally, but... Anyways, the match would go on. Kane and Ryder would fight on the outside, and it finally culminated with, like what we were just talking about, Zack Ryder being chokeslammed to the stage, and would cause him. They said he broke his back.
That is just such a generic term to make the fans think that Zack Ryder is injured.
I mean, breaking your back, that's pretty freaking serious.
Well, yeah, but usually you're a little more specific. I mean, breaking your back? How about a cracked vertebrae or a herniated disc, for example? Like, what, like, I don't know. You don't say broken back. That's just a made-up term.
It's very, wide... open term, I guess.
Here's the issue I have with this whole thing. Why is John Cena getting so mad at what Kane is doing to Zack Ryder? We've never even seen John Cena get this mad when someone is doing this to himself.
I know. I hate this program. I really hate it.
And what's with the bromance with That's Cena and Zack Ryder?
Just what I was going to say. It's like, yeah, they've got this uncomfortable almost bromance going here, and it's so.
Oh, we won't get into that.
We definitely won't get into that. But anyways, as we leave it off, Zack Ryder is then being taken away in an ambulance, with Eve actually getting mad at John Cena because she blames him for Zack Ryder getting hurt because she thinks that Cena, of course, got Ryder involved into this whole big feud between him and Kane. So she, of course, blames Cena, and it's just. Terrible execution all over, and I gotta ask you, Corey, who do you think is gonna win this match?
Well, I think, first of all, this storyline comes to an end at the Royal Rumble. I don't think it goes on from here after Sunday. No,
I disagree with you there. I think this program is gonna continue after the Royal Rumble, and it's gonna continue the build-up towards Cena's eventual heel turn, which I'm going on record as saying it's gonna happen at WrestleMania. I think I said that on the previous show.
Okay, well, if it doesn't end on Sunday at the Royal Rumble, at what point do you transition from Kane to The Rock?
Probably at the next pay-per-view.
Elimination Chamber?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have more build-up than 4 weeks. Because it's a four-week window. It's not a long window from Elimination Chamber to WrestleMania. They're going to need more time than that. I think this ends at the Royal Rumble. In fact, I wouldn't even be surprised to see The Rock show up at the Royal Rumble to confront John Cena that night. Do I think they would do that? No, because if you have The Rock in the building, you're smartest to promote the event saying The Rock's going to be there.
See, I would disagree with you there. I think if you kept The Rock a complete surprise, that would just blow the roof off of St. Louis.
Yeah, but the tickets are already sold. Yeah, but the tickets are already sold. The pay-per-view's already started. The people have already bought the pay-per-view. Yeah, but there's no point in... Think about it from a business standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Survivor Series pay-per-view was promoted around the fact that The Rock was showing up. If you say to fans heading into the Royal Rumble, The Rock's going to be there, they're going to most likely buy it. If you show them as a surprise when the tickets have already been sold,
But if the tickets are already sold, are you really making that much money? I mean, where are you going to make more? I guess on pay-per-view buys, right?
Well, you're going to make more money by promoting The Rock prior to the Royal Rumble is what I'm saying. You're not making any extra money by having him show up unexpected.
Yeah, but if the tickets are already sold, it's the same either way, whether you promote them or not.
Talking about actual physical seats. I'm talking about pay-per-view buy rates.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I was getting at there.
So, but that being said, the Royal Rumble is always full of surprises, and this would be an excellent surprise to have The Rock show up.
I think it would be a huge surprise.
Yeah.
Huge. And it would be big. And it would be big to build their program heading into WrestleMania.
Yeah, and I can't see a better night to having this program start than Royal Rumble. I mean, if it's not that, it could be the night after Monday Night Raw. I think leaving it to the Elimination Chamber is way too late to start a program that. The main event storyline heading into WrestleMania, you're going to start at Elimination Chamber? No way.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe I'll go back on that one now that I think about it. But I don't think this is just going to end and you're going to have the payoff. I think you're still going to see residual effects of this heading forward from the Rumble.
Yeah.
But
okay, I think personally that Cena takes this one. I don't think there's any
I think Cena takes it too. Because generally when I'm heading into a pay-per-view, I kind of go by the last laugh rule. You know what that is, right?
Yeah.
You watch the go-home show, whoever gets the last laugh, usually it's the other guy at the pay-per-view who wins, right?
Mm-hmm. All right, we got to move on. One match I want to talk about before we go is the World Heavyweight Championship. And with Daniel Bryan, Mark Henry, and The Big Show. Now, what are your thoughts on that match heading into the Royal Rumble? Do you care at all?
Well, no, I do care about this match. I mean, probably not as much as I'd say care about the CM Punk match.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this will be a decent match. I don't know how well worked it's going to be. I think maybe they made it a cage match to maybe make it a little bit easier.
Yeah, it is a steel cage match.
It is a steel cage match. And I think they did that maybe to make it a little bit easier work-wise for Mark Henry and Big Show. Because... I think Mark Henry has kind of got that lingering, nagging injury that he was that they kind of put the belt on Daniel Bryan for. And then I've read rumors that the Big Show actually injured himself at the last SmackDown taping. So you've got two out of the three guys in this match kind of fighting with injuries.
Why don't you catch everyone on just catch everyone up on what exactly has happened leading up to this match?
Okay, well, this particular program, it began last month at the TLC pay-per-view when Big Show and Mark Henry had a singles match for the World Heavyweight Championship. Big Show actually beat Mark Henry clean. But after the match, Mark Henry would then attack the Big Show, kind of, I think it was with a chair, kind of hit him with, did he hit him with a chair? I can't remember, honestly, can't remember. At this point. But anyways, yeah, Mark Henry attacked the Big Show, and this would cause Daniel Bryan to run down and cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase and become the World Heavyweight Champion, making Big Show the record holder for the shortest World Heavyweight Championship reign. I think it was like, what, 30 seconds, 40 seconds?
Wasn't that long.
It was less than a minute, I know that. Anyways, the next week on SmackDown, the Big Show would then use his rematch clause against Daniel Bryan, only to have Mark Henry interfere and push Daniel Bryan after, you know, Bryan kind of goaded him and agitated him. Now, this would cause Bryan to lose the match by DQ and retain his title. Now, the next week on SmackDown, Big Show and Bryan would then face off again, but this time the match was a no disqualification, no countout match, but this match would end in a no contest after Big Show would run into Daniel Bryan's kayfabe girlfriend AJ. And did you see Big Show like bawling after he did that? Like,
yeah.
I mean, acting wise, Big Show is all right, in my opinion. I think Big Show is actually one of the guys that can act a little bit better, but I mean, that was just kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
You know? And so the following week on SmackDown, so this is three SmackDowns after the TLC pay-per-view, Mark Henry now would finally use his rematch clause, and this would be a lumberjack match. Oh, yeah, this is the SmackDown from Las Vegas when they were spinning the wheel. So he would use his rematch clause in a lumberjack match. But again, this too would end in a no contest because the match would erupt into a huge brawl after Daniel Bryan kind of agitated all the lumberjacks, and then they finally got all involved, and it was just a big, huge melee, and the match got thrown out. Now, at the end of that match, Daniel Bryan actually managed to weasel his way out, make his way to the back, and that's where he'd meet up with Teddy Long. And Teddy Long would then announce that it would be a triple threat steel cage match at the Royal Rumble for the World Heavyweight Championship. Of course, this would include Big Show, Mark Henry, and Daniel Bryan.
Now, who do you think takes this match?
I think Daniel Bryan's going to retain.
I'm going to go with Mark Henry on this one. I firmly believe that Daniel Bryan is a transitional champion.
Yeah.
I think he's doing a good job with the belt. The fact that he, you know, I love how he's cheering so much after he does retain his title. I think that's a very heelish antic, and I think it's working for him, and it's really, it's working.
But I love the way that Daniel Bryan is transitioning into a heel, because honestly, Corey, the best bad guys, if you really look at, you know, villains and bad guys and stuff, the best ones are the bad guys that don't think they're bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, those are the best villains, and that's kind of what Daniel Bryan is right now. I mean, he's getting the negative reaction, which is what you want as a heel, but I don't know. You know, you kind of know what I'm trying to say here. He doesn't think he's a bad guy, and I really like that. I really like his progression. That
the problem I have with this is where does Daniel Bryan go after this match? Because you can't have him take on Big Show or Mark Henry at WrestleMania, because that's just too far down the road for them to continue it this long. So my question would be is, who would Daniel Bryan face at WrestleMania if he did retain the championship all the way until WrestleMania?
Well,
I don't have a good answer for that.
I don't either. And you know what? I think that might depend on who the actual winner of the Royal Rumble match is, maybe.
You think so? I just feel like you're going to have a much better World Heavyweight Championship match at WrestleMania if you have it on Mark Henry.
You think so?
Yeah. See, it's more convincing. And
no,
it's just
I'll disagree with you there. I think you'd have a way better match with someone like Daniel Bryan. Because he's fantastic. His in-ring skills are, you know, you and I have both seen him live.
Yeah,
I mean,
maybe this conversation will have to wait until next week when we know who is the winner of the Royal Rumble. And then we have a better idea as to whether they're going for the WWE Championship or for the World Heavyweight Championship.
Well, the one thing also you got to keep in mind is that the past 2 years in a row now, the winner of the Rumble has gone after the World Heavyweight Championship. So, again, that kind of makes me think that the winner of the Rumble this year is now going to go for the WWE title as opposed to the World Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah.
So, again, another strong argument for Chris Jericho, but
yeah, you never know.
We'll have to see how it goes, right?
Okay, one other thing I want to talk about before we head off from Tail of the Tape is the CM Punk versus Dolph Ziggler match at the Royal Rumble. Now, first of all, do you think it's going to come before the Royal Rumble, or is it going to come after the Royal Rumble?
I think all these matches are going to come. I think the Royal Rumble match itself is going to be the last match we see on the card.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Okay, well, let's set up...
Don't forget, John Laurinaitis, special guest referee for this one.
Therefore, the board has decided that your status as the interim general manager of Monday Night Raw will be officially under review. Next week on Raw, you will receive a formal job evaluation to determine whether you continue as interim general manager or if you will be terminated. And your job evaluation will be conducted by WWE Chief Operating Officer Triple H.
So did you notice in there, James, that there's absolutely no mention of Dolph Ziggler?
Yeah.
And that's the issue I have with this, is that this match for the WWE Championship is not about Dolph Ziggler.
It really seems like he's a backseat player in this whole thing, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. It's all about John Laurinaitis and CM Punk. So, now, do you think he screws him at the Royal Rumble?
You know what? I think eventually he will. I think he is going to screw CM Punk at the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably not going to be general manager after that, but we'll have to see how it goes. But yeah, I'm going to say that definitely, because I like how he's playing up this whole bullied angle. And I think it's really interesting that Laurinaitis is the heel in this whole thing, and he's the one being bullied. So, I don't know. That's just kind of interesting to me.
Who takes this match?
I think CM Punk retains. Yeah. I can't really see Dolph Ziggler taking the title. But interesting fact, though, this is the second year in a row that Dolph Ziggler's been in the main event. Well, been one of the title matches at the Royal Rumble. I mean, last year it was against Edge, I believe, for the World Heavyweight Championship. But.
Do you think Ziggler actually, if he loses this match to CM Punk, do you think he enters himself into the Royal Rumble? And does he have an actual clear shot at winning the thing?
I could definitely see that. I think Dolph Ziggler is definitely one of the strong favorites if he doesn't win the title. I don't know. I have a weird feeling that it's only going to be the losers of these matches that are going to be entering the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
So
This whole program with CM Punk, Laurinaitis, and Ziggler, have you liked it? Do you like what they're doing with it? Or would you say you wish it went down differently?
Well, you see, It's a strong contrast to the program that they have going with John Cena and Kane. Because with the program with John Cena and Kane, it's really been pushed forward by backstage segments. Whereas this program has really been progressed by the in-ring matches and whatnot, right? Mm-hmm. So,
all right. Well, I think we're going to leave it at that. We are way over time
already.
Holy
smokes, are we ever.
All right, we got to take a little break here. But coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live, we are actually speaking next with David Heath, better known to the wrestling world as Gangrel. We had a chance to speak with him at a local event in Cloverdale, BC, which is just outside Vancouver.
That's right, the ASW show.
And we had a chance to talk to him. One of the things I'm excited to hear about is his thoughts on his buddy Edge entering the Hall of Fame.
That's right. Also coming up, tonight's top five. We didn't announce it at the top of the show, but of course tonight's top five is going to be the top five Royal Rumble moments.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
Listening to Smack Talk Radio Live.
All right, welcome back to Smack Talk Radio Live. Now, James, we had a chance to check out the ASW show, which is out at Cloverdale. That was on January 13th, and that featured Gangrel.
Yeah, you know what? That was actually a really, really good show. I had a really good time. It was a great family atmosphere. There was tons of kids there. They were living it up, having a great time.
You're giving it a thumbs up.
Oh, definitely. I'm definitely giving it a thumbs up. I'd go back.
Wow, that's complete opposite of the last ASW show that we went to.
It was complete opposite. What can I say?
One thing I really liked about that show that they had improved on, and they basically took my advice and ran with it. I mean, I don't think that's the reason why they did it, but they improved the audio.
Yes.
The speaker quality.
That made such a difference.
You could hear them talking on the mic. You could hear the promos. It was just a much better show in that aspect, and I really applaud them for doing
that. Hey, now the only thing my suggestion would be now is that they've made that screen thing they got at the back. Get that centered properly. And then other than that, perfect.
Okay, so we did have a chance. We were lucky enough to talk with David Heath, like we said. His name is Gangrel, former WWF superstar, of course. And let's listen in on what him and I had a chance to talk about. All right, so we're here with David Heath, also known to the wrestling universe as Gangrel. Is that what you're going by these days?
Gangrel Vampire Warrior, yeah. Sure am.
So you're up here in Cloverdale, BC, just outside of Vancouver here tonight. How was it for you?
Oh, it was tremendous. The crowd response was great. And that's why I still wrestle, is because, you know, the feed off the crowd, it's like a drug wrestling, you know. So you come out here and everybody's pumped. It made it easier. Being a baby face and everything, too, you know, they're going to cheer for you. But it still felt good. It was a rewarding night, you know. And it felt good to wrestle in front of a crowd that appreciated it with some great guys and stuff. So.
Have you been to Vancouver before?
Oh, I've been to Vancouver a few times. I actually wrestled, the General Motors Center a few times, the pay-per-views, yeah.
GM Place?
Yeah,
now
GM
Rogers
Place.
Rogers Arena.
There you go. All right, there you go.
And you have any memories from those days?
From being up here in Vancouver?
Yeah.
That this is beautiful country, man, you know. I remember all the other guys are busy off doing other things like that, but, you know, I was just taking in the scenery. It's really relaxing up here, kind of like, makes you kind of feel spiritual a little bit when you get here, you know. You're not so much fanging and banging, you just want to kind of relax and not stress, you know, so.
What's your take on the whole wrestling scene up in the Pacific Northwest?
Pacific Northwest as in, like, Oregon? Or
Oregon,
Pacific Northwest,
Washington,
here?
Vancouver?
Well, Oregon, I've seen some hit and miss. There's been some kind of weird companies there and up, but up here was really cool. And then I really like wrestling because I miss the old territories. I miss the Calgary days. I miss, Don Owens, Portland, Oregon wrestling. This kind of stuff I grew up on. I broke in Calgary as a Blackheart. So I'm kind of partial to the side. You know, we'd run over here, do a 10-hour ride in a van to do this, you know, come over to Vancouver and run. So you know, I miss it. I got a spot in my heart here for it. You know.
And you're living in California, so
I'm living in Los Angeles, Burbank now, yeah.
And are you actively wrestling there?
I have a wrestling school there in Knox Pro Academy. So me, Rikishi, and a fellow named Cal Black Pearl at Reno in Hawaii, we have a training school. We wrestle there, and we're currently doing a thing called a Territory League. If you check it out, go to territoryleague.com, and you'll see it's a whole new concept on wrestling teams, like cities versus cities, like Los Angeles Templars against Reno Scum, against Bay City Union, you know. So we do team wrestling, and you win as a team, lose as a team. So it's kind of like football or hockey, whatnot. And we have a cup you win at the end of the year. You know, we have stats, keeping track of everything, win, loss.
And that's territorywrestling.com.
Territoryleague.com.
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 Yeah. Now, I want to get into a couple other things, but first I just wanted to briefly ask you. Obviously, you had a run with the WWE. How did that go for you? How did it end? How are things today?
I'm in a really good relationship with them. It ended when I got hurt. My first run was like 5 years. I was out with pretty much a broken neck, herniated disc. They wanted to fuse all four vertebrae, but I was out for a year. I got cleared to come back, and they let me go. Then they hired me back again. I did a little thing with The Undertaker, and they left me home for like 7 months, let me go. Then they hired me back again for the ECW run, and they never used me after 8 months, they let me go. So, you know, I've been there three times. One time I actually worked, you know, got hurt, and the other two just on paper, so.
And so, one thing I wanted to ask you about specifically tonight was a guy you had a long run with in the WWE, Edge, recently announced to go into the WWE Hall of Fame. What's your recollection of Edge, and just what are your thoughts of him going into the Hall of Fame?
Well, Edge is a really cool guy, man. You know, he's one of the good ones. You know, I met him before he was in, you know, WWE, and he came in. And he was there actually before me, and came in, and they had to figure out how to bring him in, and the whole brood thing worked. And he's one of the nicest guys that I've ever known. True. Loves his mom. How do you hate a guy that loves his mom? Loves his dogs, you know what I mean? He's a really stand-up class guy, you know, and I was really sad to see him go, but I was glad he left on his own terms. You know, he took care of his money. He's really smart, really frugal, and if he deserves it, and I'm really happy for him being in the Hall of Fame. That's awesome.
Do you have a good story that you can tell us about Edge, about you guys out on the road, or a good, you know, one night that really stands out?
It was many nights. They were mostly babysitting me, so I don't remember those nights. Goes back then, those two Canadian boys, they didn't party too much. You know, they were kind of the goody-goody two-shoe boys, you know. But I don't know, one night, you know, he stopped me and Michael Hayes. We were out. Michael Hayes was with the Hardys at an Outback, and, you know, I was with Edge and Christian, and me and Michael Hayes got to talking, drinking Jack Daniel's shots, and Edge had to come break up a headbutt contest between me and Michael Hayes. We were in a headbutt, so I got Michael Hayes' buddy in the head. He goes, Jesus Christ, you old guys, you know, you're off, you know. And then, you know, Edge and they were, like, really good guys at the time, you know, and he always told me about the Indian reserves and stuff, like the reserves up here with the natives and all that. Yeah. All the stories, and I finally worked one way back, you know. So next time I see him, I actually called him on the phone, and I said, hey, I did the death tour. He goes, oh, why would you do that after 20 years of wrestling? I go, I don't know, because you told me so much about it, you know. Yeah. So, you know, I liked all his stories. And then going back on my backside of my career and experience the stuff he started with. So it was kind of cool. A weird full circle came around, you know. So, yeah, but he's really, I still talk to him time to time. He's really good.
Is there any chance that we can see you in Miami at the Hall of Fame, or is that something that's too premature to ask?
Well, probably premature. They never asked me. So being they don't own the Gangrel name, I think there's issues. They try not to do anything with me, you know. So, so it makes a real hard issue with them not owning that name, you know. So it's cost me on dolls, all the extras and stuff like that.
But now, what's your take on just what the WWE is like today? I mean, you still watch it actively, and if so, I mean, are you liking it or you not liking it?
I wasn't liking it. You know, it was so cookie cutter, but wrestling evolves. But, you know, not just because I was in the Attitude Era, but I believe in characters, you know, fat guys, small guys, muscular guys, you know, some guys in between, you know, really tough guys, really not tough. I like characters, you know, and everybody having a storyline. They got so monogamous with the it was just everybody looked the same, you know. They took a big stamp, which they stamped everybody out, and then that's what you got. Everybody looks like Randy Orton, everybody looks like Cody Rhodes. But lately, I've been catching a little bit of a show here and there, and it looks like it's changing around a little bit. But what we got to remember, too, with wrestling, everything evolves. You know, we're not going to get the Attitude Era. But also, as it evolves, we got to remember everything's a cycle. So hopefully wrestling will evolve, but come back around in a really cool cycle, and hopefully in another few years we'll see a cool era like the Attitude Era. You know?
Are you a fan of the PG era?
No. There's no blood, no spray, no vampires. What do you want, man? No, I can't be a fan of that.
How about you and TNA? Have you ever had any talks with them?
No, because we're really busy working on that territory league. I mean, the last 3 years we've been dedicated to getting that thing off the ground, and should check it out. It's finally getting going. We're getting ready to go into second season. We're getting ready to wrap this one up, and we got a lot of things in the works. So I'm not just saying it because I'm involved, but you should keep an eye out for it. We'll never be a WWE or this, but it's a whole different concept, and you'll enjoy it. So check it out, territoryleague.com.
Anything else you're working on these days you want to let people know?
No, man. I'm just still out fanging and banging on the weekends, doing this and that, you know, getting by, you know. I say a late happy birthday to Miss Luna. Her birthday just passed on the 12th of Thursday, January. Miss her so much. And other than that, she's a fellow Canadian. There you
That's
go.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, man, no, just like I say, thank you to everybody, anybody listening to the interview, taking the time to listen to the interview. Bless you. Thank you very much for supporting us. And I love it.
You got to love the authentic indie show audio in the background.
I'm loving the whole fanging and banging thing.
I know. I might start using that.
You know, he struck me as a really cool guy that you could just go out and have a couple of beers with and just have a cool time with. He was a really nice down to earth guy, I thought.
Yeah, and I thought he did really well at the show in Cloverdale. I thought he had an excellent match.
Oh, yeah, he did. He had a great match.
And they've announced that he's coming back to Cloverdale as well. So he look for him to take on Vance Nevada when he comes back. Remember Vance Nevada, or he challenged Vance Nevada for the Trans Canada title.
It was supposed to be a singles match, but they actually turned it into a 3-on-3 6-man.
No, but after the match was over, he challenged Vance, and Vance said he'd think about it. Well, apparently it's been agreed upon, and Gangrel is coming back to Cloverdale. I don't know the exact date off the top of my head, but he is coming back. But thanks to Gangrel for doing this interview with us, and you know I find it very interesting to catch up with someone who had such a history with a guy like Edge, who is going into the Hall of Fame. It's nice to hear that what his thoughts are on the whole thing. And I'd like to see Gangrel at the Hall of Fame ceremony in Miami.
It would be nice, but it's probably not going to happen.
No, probably not. Well, James, why don't we move on from here, and why don't we get on with the post-to-post report?
Sounds good.
Catching you up with the business of the business. It's time for the post-to-post report.
All right, the post-to-post report, and I've decided to change the catchphrase so James doesn't repeat me. I'm going with nothing this week. All right, James, let's start the post-to-post report off with something that isn't brand new news, but we didn't have a show last week, and I really think it's worth mentioning. Evan Bourne was suspended recently for violating the WWE's wellness policy.
Oh, jeez.
This would be his second violation, and as a result, he will serve a 60-day suspension. Some reports suggest that Bourne may not be brought back after the 60 days, and that his days with the company are over. Bourne's first violation was reportedly a result of him using synthetic marijuana named Spice, which is a banned substance in the WWE. This couldn't come at a worse time for Bourne, as he was one half of the tag team champions with Kofi Kingston, and as a result of this violation, he was forced to drop the belts at a recent house show to Epico and Primo. This also sits Bourne out for the Royal Rumble pay-per-view, and almost most certainly keeps him off WrestleMania 28 in Miami.
God, career suicide or what, you know?
Some people just love to screw up. And
yeah.
I don't know how you can make a mistake like that when you are
working for
the WWE.
I think he posted on his Twitter account that he's his own worst enemy.
Yeah.
So, anyways, WWE sent out a press release yesterday unveiling a new division within their company, something they're calling WWE Digital Properties. Now, the new venture enables brands to deliver targeted digital advertising across WWE.com and category brands, including Maxim, Major League Gaming, PBR Bull Riding, and more. The release states that the WWE Digital Properties will offer advertisers high-impact, custom online and offline campaign solutions through its contextually relevant portfolio of partners. Now, as a result, brands can reach over 18 million unique visitors worldwide each month. Andrew Jettelson, Executive Vice President of Sales and Partnership Marketing with the WWE, said, "Brands and agencies are constantly chasing the elusive, young, make audience and finding it challenging to reach them in an authentic way. Additional strategic partners are expected to be added to the new WWE Digital Properties platform in the coming year."
This is essentially them coming out with a platform of how they plan to advertise on the WWE website. That's what I'm gathering from this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're about to start seeing a whole new realm of annoying ads as you surf the WWE website.
Awesome. That's just what I wanted.
Yeah. Now, in an award that I thought my co-host James would have had locked down, Daniel Bryan has been awarded the title of Most Animal-Friendly Athlete by PETA 2, which I guess is different from PETA 1. Daniel Bryan is, of course, a vegan, which he credits with giving him remarkable strength and endurance. He was awarded the winner of the Most Animal-Friendly Athlete at PETA 2's 6th Annual Libby Awards, beating out Philadelphia Phillies' Chase Utley, Strike Force's champ Jake Shields, and Denver Broncos' Willis McGahey.
First of all, I didn't even know there was two PETAs.
Neither did I.
A PETA 1 and a PETA 2.
Oh, well.
Jeez.
I'm not even going to touch that one.
Well, like we spoke about on our last episode of Smack Talk Radio Live, the WWE Network appears to be delayed. The past 2 weeks, the WWE has not run ads promoting the new network on Monday Night Raw, and sources are indicating a possible November launch at the earliest. The upcoming Legends House show, scheduled to start filming soon in Rancho Mirage at the house of the late comedian Harpo Marx, will possibly be shopped around to other networks and not launch with the new WWE network.
We touched on this last show. Obviously, it's going to be delayed.
Oh, it's got to be.
But they're going forward with this Legends House. I think the hype around this show forces them to get into filming, regardless of whether the network is going to be ready or not. So they figure if it's not going to be ready, they're going to shop it to, you know, all their carriers that they currently have. I wouldn't be surprised if you see it on the Score Network.
You know what? Like I said on our previous episodes, I am completely fine with them delaying the launch as long as they take the time to do something like this properly. Because this definitely has, you know, like we were saying, the potential to be another XFL blow-up, right?
Yeah. So. Now, rumors are running rampant that the WWE officials are looking into doing a possible 3D presentation of this year's SummerSlam pay-per-view. This is being thought about after the UFC recently announced similar plans. UFC is actually going to do their first 3D broadcast February 4th from Las Vegas. I'd actually really like to see what this looks like.
That would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, the thing about the WWE is they took so long to get to high def. Remember, like, they're supposed to be the leader in television broadcasting, but they took forever to get to high def. Why not take a leap and really come out with one of the first true 3D sporting events? I mean, you don't see a lot of sporting events in 3D. I mean, you've seen some, but really, let's try it.
I think hockey's the only one that I've seen in 3D.
Well, they've done it in baseball.
Have they?
Yeah. ESPN has a 3D channel down in the States, and they have certain content on there. But point being, I mean, you're supposed to be the leader. Let's step up. Let's try a 3D broadcast and see how it works. I just got a brand new 3D TV. I got nothing to watch on it, so that would be gold for me.
Well, shall we move into the financials?
Yeah, let's just get right into it quickly here. Now, the current WWE stock price is $9.53 a share. That's down 22 cents from 2 weeks ago, which was our last episode.
So it seems like it's treading water, but...
Yeah, it's not, essentially not a big deal. Now, in terms of television ratings this week, the go-home show for the Royal Rumble pay-per-view, which was the, of course, January 23rd edition of Monday Night Raw, that scored a 3.18 rating, which is up 6% from last week's 3.01 rating. Now, Raw averaged 4.62 million viewers, up 8% from an average of 4.29 million viewers last week. Raw did, however, follow the growing trend of second-hour viewership declining compared to the first, 4.67 million in the first hour and 4.57 million in the second. This marks the 13th week out of the past 14 that this has happened.
Jeez.
Now, this week's show, it was the highest-rated Raw since the 3.23 rating on November 28th of last year, and as a result, it ranked number 3 on cable TV Monday night, trailing History Channel programming.
That damn History Channel.
Mm-hmm. That is your post-to-post report, catching you up on the business of the business.
You are such... I'm not even saying it on air.
All right. Now, James, as we head into break, why don't you just quickly run down some house show figures?
Okay, well, the Super Show in Winnipeg, Manitoba on the 20th of January, it drew 6,000 fans for a gate of 240,000. Now, the Super Show in Fargo, North Dakota on the 21st of January, that too drew 6,000 fans for a gate of 145,000. And the Super Show on the 22nd of January in Las Cruces, am I saying that right? Anyways, in New Mexico, that drew 7,200 fans for a gate of 200K.
Okay, now coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live, we have the local wrestling scene, and I was lucky enough to speak with Mike Patinaud, who is the Secretary Treasurer of the Vancouver Athletic Commission. I wanted to have a talk with him, just finding out what exactly the relationship with the WWE and the city of Vancouver is, and just how successful was that house show that they recently had here. Mm. We'll get all into it more in the post-to-post report.
Should be good. And of course, in tonight's Top 5, we're going to cover the Top 5 Royal Rumble moments.
This is Smack Talk Radio Live.
The local wrestling scene, bringing you up to date with the promotions all over the Pacific Northwest.
All right, the local wrestling scene, catching you up to date with...
I'm not going to say anything, I promise.
All that's going around the Pacific Northwest. Now, James, usually we talk about, you know, ECCW, ASW, West Coast Wrestling Connection. We've talked about a lot of indie organizations in this segment throughout the show. But for once, we're actually going to talk about the WWE in the local wrestling scene.
Wow, it just saturates all facets of our show today, doesn't it?
I know, it really does. But there's a good reason for it, and that's because on January 14th, the WWE was in town at the P&E Agrodome in Vancouver.
Great show.
And they hosted a house show, you know, your typical non-televised event. There were a lot of pros, a few cons. What are your thoughts on the show? We both went to it. What did you think of it?
Well, you know what? I really enjoyed the smaller atmosphere and the kind of old school boxing style lighting, because they just had the one light hanging down onto the ring, and it really gave it that old school.
Like, so you like
boxing.
That? You
I
like
do.
That.
I do. It's a throwback to the days of yore.
I couldn't stand it.
No.
I couldn't stand the fact that I could barely make out their faces when they were in the ring. I just thought the lighting needs to be improved upon. I understand that, you know, the budget probably isn't there, but I just really was not a fan of the lighting. That was the one thing that really deterred me. And, of course, there was the entranceway. I thought they could have put more than 5 minutes on the entranceway.
That was terrible. Like, I was expecting to see this big new house show entrance set up that they have, and it was, what, like, couple of mezzanines with some drapes.
Oh, I mean, it probably took them all 5 minutes to make. I was expecting to see this brand new house show set that
they've
been advertising.
That's just what I was saying, exactly.
Yeah, and they didn't even show up. Nope. So, but aside from that, aside from that, the whole show really was good. And the one thing I had to notice was that the Agrodome was absolutely packed. I mean,
it was unbelievable.
It was a great vibe for a wrestling event and something that Vancouver has missed for a while. I mean, mm-hmm. they did the house show last year, but this was a really good turnout, I should say. Mm-hmm. But it got me thinking, why do we not see wrestling in Vancouver more often?
Yeah, like we haven't had a pay-per-view here since December 1998, yeah. for God's sake.
And why? Exactly. I mean, it's one thing to have a house show, but we haven't had a televised taping for such a long time.
The last one, I think, was Monday Night Raw and back in 02 or 03. I think we went to that one, didn't we?
Yes, that was the night Kid Rock made an appearance and sang at Monday Night Raw.
Oh, and that was also the night that Shane McMahon, I remember this, got tombstoned by Kane onto a set of steps. That was like the big spot of the night. Okay. So.
I don't remember that. I just remember Kid Rock singing.
You remember Kid Rock. I remember the tombstone.
Yeah, I can't even remember what song he sang.
Doesn't matter.
American Badass. That's what he sang in Vancouver. He sang American Badass in Vancouver. That goes to show you something. So anyways, thinking about this whole thing, I decided I needed to talk to someone from the Vancouver Athletic Commission, who of course is the governing body of wrestling and mixed martial arts in Vancouver. So anytime these promoters want to put on an event in Vancouver, they have to go through the Vancouver Athletic Commission. And I got a hold of Mike Patinod. He is the secretary treasurer. And I had a chance to speak to him about this whole idea earlier today.
When wrestling and mixed martial arts come to Vancouver or want to come to Vancouver, they need to approach the Vancouver Athletic Commission. Just for the people who don't know, what exactly is the Vancouver Athletic Commission all about? And what's their purpose in the community?
So the Vancouver Athletic Commission is a city-appointed commission. We look after all regulated combat sports. So when I say regulated, that means it has to be a pro sport. So when you see these amateur events that occur, we're not part of that. The main purpose of any athletic commission is fighter safety and regulation. And that's basically anything we do comes back to that same thing, that we're looking out for fighter safety and regulation. So we sanction pro events. With any pro event, we look at everything from the officials that are hired to the actual participants, making sure they've got the venue, the correct insurance for venue. There's a whole list of things that we look after for them.
Is it safe to say that these organizations or these promoters have to answer to you guys? I mean, how much say do you have over what actually happens at their event?
Well, we don't have actually a lot of say over what happens at their actual event. As long as their event falls within guidelines, and our guidelines are very similar to any other athletic commission across North America, as long as they fall within the guidelines, it's not up to us to really say content. You know, the only part where we may get involved is if we see a really bad mismatch. That's our responsibility, because, again, coming back, like I said, to fighter safety. We go back there and look and say, like, we don't think that this is a very good match. It's not a safe match, and so we won't condone this match. But I've never even canceled one yet. So. Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand that there's probably a huge separation between professional wrestling and mixed martial arts, and I could probably have a whole other conversation with you about mixed martial arts, but for tonight's purposes, we're just going to talk about professional wrestling. Now, on January 14th, the WWE did have a live house show at the PNE Agrodome. How did that go for you guys? Was it a successful event was it successful for the WWE, and was it successful from your standpoint? And just how did that all come about? How did that show come together?
So, okay. So the first part, I would say the show was successful comparing the numbers. Cause you know, as you mentioned, I'm the secretary treasurer. So comparing the numbers to last year, as you know, they were back, I think, February last year. Their numbers were very similar. It's a pretty much packed house at the Agrodome, which is and I think the Agrodome is a good venue for things like that. So, yeah, it was a packed house. I attended, as my role as a commissioner. I think it was very successful. So your next part was what you asked, how did they approach us?
Yeah, I was going to get to this a little later, but I maybe as well ask you now. How does it happen? Okay. Like when the WWE wants to, I guess they want, the, you know, they get it in their head that they want to put a show on in Vancouver. How does that process begin for them?
So initially what they would do is they would send out kind of an email to the Vancouver Athletic Commission saying, you know, we have an interest in coming back and doing doing a show in Vancouver. There's things that they do that don't involve us directly, so it's up to them to find a venue. So they deal directly with the P&E Agridome. That particular location is a little bit different, though, because, as you probably know, it's owned by the City of Vancouver. So they're dealing with the City of Vancouver a little bit. So with any promoter, there's two parts. Part is it to deal with the Vancouver Commission, and part of it is to deal with the city. Typically, any promotion is going to have to get some sort of event permit, and that comes from the City of Vancouver, the Inspections Department. We actually have someone on the commission in an advisory role, Tom Hamill, and he works for the city, and that's his role. He looks after the actual licensing and inspections, that role. What we look after that, there's a checklist for every sport. And so at that point, we would go back to the WWE and say, okay, here's a list of things that we need for you to continue with your show. So because the WWE is a larger venue, like a larger show, more than 500 people per event, they have to, of course, there's a fee that they submit for the actual event fee to us. There's actually an annual license fee per participant. So depending when they come back and depending who they have, that participant may still be licensed from the year before. It's not a large fee. It's only $20 per participant. That's an annual fee, so It's not like we're making money on it. They have to provide insurance, and basically what the insurance is, commercial general liability insurance, and depending on the size of the show, for shows that are 500 and less, they need at least $2 million, and for shows that are $5 million or more, they need a $5 million liability insurance, and that's to cover off everything, and that's not untypical of anything that happens, you know, in the city, not just combat sports. They have to provide indemnification to the Vancouver Athletic Commission in the city, and they have to get a Vancouver Athletic Commission promoter's license at no cost, which typically we used to charge before, and this year we felt that we were double charging them. So we actually got rid of that fee of having to pay for the actual promoter's license. They have to submit to us that there's going to be an ambulance or BC paramedics at the event. They have to show us some sort of security protocol, that there's going to be security personnel that's been arranged with the venue operator. Of course, they have to allow the commission to come, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's a few other little things, you know, like we check with the criminal record check if we need be. Of course, with the WWE, we don't do that. We don't feel that there's a need to do that. So there's kind of a checklist we go through, and as they get those things done, it gets closer to the date, then the show starts to happen.
And is your, comparing the Vancouver Athletic Commission to other cities around North America, would you consider it to be a fair commission? Like, is the WWE quite happy with what you guys require for them to put on an event?
I believe so. I mean, I've talked with Richard Herring directly of the WWE, and I've worked with him this year and last year. And he was, you know, he was happy with anything that we asked of him, and he had no problem getting anything to us. And of course, he doesn't always attend the shows here, and he has people that I work with here, and we worked with them, and there was no issues. So I think so. I think we're fairly fair in terms of WWE. I'm not even sure that professional wrestling is covered by all athletic commissions, but we do cover it here, and we try to be, you know, as easygoing as possible, as long as they fall within the guidelines.
Do you have any numbers on just how many attended the January 14th show?
Roughly, yeah. I believe it was just over 4,000, because I met with them afterwards, and we were looking at seat attendance. And, of course, there was a few hundred that would, what we call comp seats, that, you know, the WWE gives out a certain amount of seats to certain people. But in general, I think there was just over 4,000, maybe like 4,040 or something. And, you know, so it was a good sellout, which is within about 20 seats of what it was the year before. So,
and to me, that seems like quite a high number for a live event. And, you know, those house shows aren't typically televised, and the match caliber wouldn't be as good as, say, let's say, a Monday Night Raw or a pay-per-view possibly coming to Vancouver, which leads me to my next question. Just why do you think, and you don't need to speak on behalf of the city, but just personal opinion, why do you think we're not seeing more WWE events in Vancouver and bigger, larger-scale events?
Yeah, I'm not really too sure. Like, as you and I had a conversation a little bit earlier, I saw the roster to another event that we initially thought was going to be ours, and we saw John Cena on the roster. It turned out that he was on another match that night, but somewhere else, I believe California on a Raw. But I'm not quite sure. I mean, it's not like they've ever approached us and said, you know, can we have these guys? Or, you know, they approach us when they want to have an event, and we're like, yeah, we can do it. I mean, I've heard the talks of doing the full WrestleMania back here in Vancouver. I think it's a bid system. I'm not really sure how it works, but I'm not sure if the city participates in the bid or not. Mm-hmm. Like I say, we just deal with the regulation and sanctioning of it, so we don't get involved in bidding, you know, to get the event here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I mean, you know, as we know with other combat sports, Vancouver is a good city for all combat sports. You know, I think, I know it's off topic, but I know for the UFC, for example, you know, Vancouver is in the top 20-25 of pay-per-views in the world. Mm-hmm. So, and I know wrestling is probably fairly close to that in Vancouver. You know, we seem to have high pay-per-view numbers in Vancouver.
Now, when you had mentioned John Cena originally was supposed to be on this January 14th show, was the roster completely different originally, and they had sort of altered it as time went on?
No, I think it was just actually a kind of mistake. I think because there was two events going on, and they sent us the original roster, and I think it was another show's roster. And then, of course, we contacted them to say, is this the correct roster? And they said, oh, actually, sorry, there's a mistake there. Because I said, it says California or something at the top. And they said, oh no, that's wrong. So they sent us the correct roster, and everything was fine. So I think it was just a slip.
Oh, okay. So. And when they do want to put on a show in Vancouver, how far in advance are they contacting you guys?
Typically, you know, we ask for 30 to 60 days. Some of the requirements actually is that they do need to get some of the information and fees to us 60 days beforehand. To be honest with you, that doesn't typically happen with the WWE, and I think that's due to the nature of the sport, because there's a big storyline behind the sports in professional wrestling, and so things change quite often, whereas actual participants can change right up before the day of the event, depending what happens the night before. So they didn't quite give us the full deadline amount of time that we would have liked, but like I said, because we do have a track history with them and we've worked with them in the past, we were willing to still try to accommodate them. And, you know, we worked right up until almost the Thursday before the event, getting everything set. So, I mean, they don't give you as much as say we'd like on the other. But they're, you know, they're good to work with. We don't have a problem with them. You know, they do everything they're supposed to do, and we've never had an issue with them. So.
All right. Now, you had mentioned earlier that you've heard the rumors about a committee that is trying to bring WrestleMania to Vancouver. Have you heard anything in that regard? Is there any sort of update you can provide us in that department?
I'm sorry, no. I don't actually know anything about that. We haven't been told or heard of anything like that. You know, once it gets a little more solid and they do think that Vancouver may be a potential site for that, we hope they approach the commission as soon as possible, though, so that we can help, you know, get it going and get everything set for them.
So it's safe to say that Vancouver would want WrestleMania to come, because, I mean, it can boost a local economy by about $50 million.
Sure. I mean, I can't speak for the city of Vancouver, but the Vancouver Athletic Commission is always happy to see them come back. And again, as long as they fall within the guidelines and did everything they're supposed to do, we'd be happy to have the Vancouver Commission, I'm sure, would be happy to have them back. So.
All right. And have you heard anything about any possible future WWE events coming to Vancouver? Is there even a rumor going on at this point?
No. We've just heard nothing. Even post-event, we've had very limited talk with them, just settling up some things after the event. But no, I'm not sure if this is going to be like a one-time annual thing that they do once a year and they come, because it was around this time last year they came. They really haven't given us any direction as to what their plan is with their shows in Vancouver. So,
but in terms of them coming to do a televised show, you have no real reason as to why that may not have happened in the last little while?
No, I have no idea why.
Okay.
So we haven't heard of it through the commission and the city. If they've been approached, they would normally, you know, bring it up with us as well. And we haven't heard anything from our city counterpart. So.
Okay. Mike, I just want to switch gears for one second here. And we're talking about the WWE, but one thing I wanted to ask you about was local wrestling. And that's a prominent topic on our show. And specifically ECCW, Elite Canadian Championship Wrestling. They recently changed their name. Mm-hmm. You, of course, know Mary Diaz, who is, you know, one of the promoters of that organization. What's your relationship with them? How have they done with their Kid Tolano shows in Vancouver? And just how successful has that relationship been with you guys?
It's been good. Mary Nash, or Diaz, or I guess it's whatever name you want to use. You know, she comes out to all our commission meetings. You know, she's quite happy to work with us on events. You know, they give us lots of head time on their events. They have all their licensees done up in the event, and all their licenses are filled out. She's a great person to work with, and I have nothing negative to say whatsoever about the ECCW. I've heard their shows are really good. I don't go to all of them, of course, but I've heard from people that do attend them. They put on a great show, and I know the attendance numbers are quite a bit lower, obviously, than the WWE, but I hear that they're going out to Surrey, I guess, fairly soon, which will kind of maybe double what they normally do in terms of capacity. And just a great show, and it's got local talent. And I would encourage anyone in Vancouver, if you're at all interested in wrestling, to go check out one of their shows. So.
Okay. Mike, thank you very much. Is there anything else you wanted to add before I let you go?
No, that's good, and I appreciate the phone call. And if we can ever help you with anything else, please don't hesitate to give us a call back.
Okay, Mike Patton with the Vancouver Athletic Commission. Thank you very much, sir. Much appreciated.
Have a nice day.
So there you go, James. Conversation with the Vancouver Athletic Commission. If you ever wanted to know what goes on behind the scenes with the WWE,
that was really
good. There you go.
It's very informative. Now, I like how you guys were talking about ECCW at the end, and I know we're running really long on time here, but I really have to throw this out there. Tomorrow night, ECCW has got a big show going on at Bridgeview Hall. It's called Clash of the Titans. They're going to award their new title belt.
Yeah. Yes.
So in a ladder match, first ladder match in 9 years. I'm going to quickly go over the card here. Now we have a quarterfinal tournament match, and this is going to have Nick Price versus Tony Baroni. Then we're going to have a semifinal tournament matches for the title belt. This is going to have Jordy Taylor facing Pete Powers, and then El Fantasmo, he'll be facing the winner of that Nick Price-Tony Baroni match, and then of course the winner of those two matches face each other in the ladder match, the first one in 9 years. And then the big match of the night, actually, it's got Scotty Mack taking on Gorgeous Michelle Starr one-on-one. So that should be really interesting to see. Now, again, this is tomorrow night, Bridgeview Hall. That address is 11475 126th A Street in Surrey. For more information or to buy tickets, you can visit their website, www.eccw.com. Tickets are $18 for the front row, $15 for general admission. Doors open at 7:30, bell times at 8 o'clock. Don't miss it.
Like I've said before, this man is a marketing machine. Now, who do you think takes the first ever ECCW, well, the new title, I should say. Who do you think takes it?
I have a feeling it's going to be Tony Baroni.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with El Fantasmo.
El Fantasmo?
Mm-hmm. And what about Scotty Mack versus Michelle Starr? I'm really looking forward to that one.
You know what? I see Michelle Starr going over in that one.
Really?
I do.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be a good one. I'm going to try my best to make it out to this one tomorrow, actually. I'm really excited for this one.
Okay, well, we got to take a little break, but coming up on Smack Talk Radio Live, we have our ever-so-popular tradition, tonight's Top 5, and tonight's Top 5's topic, James?
Top 5 Royal Rumble Moments.
As I've said it before, I'll say it again, this is Smack Talk Radio Live. Call all the shots, rip all the spots, rock all the rocks, top all the drops. I know you're thinking now when all the ball stops. You never home, gotta call me on the yacht. 10 years from now, we'll still be on top. Yo, I thought I told you that we won't stop. Now what you gonna do with a crew that got money much longer than yours? And a team much stronger than yours. Violate me, this will be your day. We don't play, mess around me. Be on your way, cause it ain't enough time.
You're listening to Smack Talk Radio Live. Helping you remember what most of us couldn't. Tonight's Top 5.
All right, welcome back to Smack Talk Radio Live. This is tonight's Top 5. And James, it's a pretty simple one.
It is.
Top 5 Royal Rumble moments as we head into the big show this Sunday. Why don't you kick it off?
All right, number 5, Maven shocks the world. This happened at the 2002 Royal Rumble. Now, The Undertaker was a 12-year WWE veteran who rarely lost or even looked vulnerable in the ring against fellow main eventers. Maven Huffman was the inaugural winner of the Tough Enough reality series to find a new WWE superstar and a legitimate rookie. At the 2002 Royal Rumble, The Undertaker had cleared the ring but was being distracted by Matt and Jeff Hardy, who he had just dumped over the top. With his attention turned to the floor, Maven made the boldest move of his short-lived career, drop-kicking the dead man over the top rope, eliminating him from the Rumble match. Furious, The Undertaker re-entered to eliminate Maven and proceeded to beat him all around the arena. He even took further revenge by eliminating Maven the next year from the 2003 Rumble, and despite this vengeance, Maven eliminating The Undertaker remains one of the most shocking and memorable moments in Royal Rumble history.
Now, if I remember correctly, I don't remember Maven actually getting eliminated from this Rumble. No, I watched this, and I remember Maven... they just basically said that Maven had been eliminated. They never actually showed eliminated.
Now that I think about that, yeah, it was weird.
No, that never happened. It was a weird ending to that, to Maven's Rumble match. But what I'm saying is, I never did see him get eliminated. So he should have won that one. All right, this brings us to number four. Triple H becomes a main eventer. That was Royal Rumble 2000. Now, at the Royal Rumble in 2000, Triple H took on Cactus Jack. This match had two great professionals and put Triple H over big time. Before this match, the WWE still wasn't too sure about Triple H. They had questions such as, could he carry a main event match consistently? Could he be that top guy? Stone Cold and The Rock were around at the time, so in the WWE's eyes, if Triple H couldn't be their future, one of those two would. However, because management believed in him so much, they put the world title on him, and while he did have great matches before, the first real test was against Foley. If he could do well here, it would solidify him as a main event star. Now, Foley was still and is still known for taking a lot of risks and doing everything to entertain the fans. It was a street fight, which meant everything was legal, and the only rule was to pin the opponent in the ring. The match consisted of a few memorable spots, such as Triple H handcuffing Foley, belly to back dropping Foley onto an announce table, Foley hitting Triple H with a barbed wire 2x4, and the one that decided the match, Triple H pedigreeing Foley onto thumbtacks. It's funny, here we are 10 years later, and that belief in Triple H has paid off big time. He's now one of the WWE's top guys, and was the guy for years.
Yeah, it, you know, it is funny that they weren't too sure about Triple H back in those days, but that, yeah, I have to say, that match was really what solidified him and kind of put him up there with The Rock and Stone Cold as one of the top guys in the Attitude Era.
Mm-hmm. This will bring us to number three. The Dead Man, he's the last man standing. That was at Royal Rumble 2007. Now, despite being one of the most successful WWE superstars of all time, up until 2007, The Undertaker had never won the Royal Rumble match. Drawing number 30 in 07, this seemed destined to change, but it was not as straightforward as you would think. Taker spent a grueling 13 minutes in the ring, having to endure a chair attack from tag team champions Rated RKO before going head-to-head with Rumble veteran Shawn Michaels. The two went on to have the best one-on-one sequence in the history of the Rumble match, a 7.5-minute battle that ended with The Undertaker triumphing and becoming the first winner to have drawn the coveted number 30 spot.
Isn't that kind of interesting? It took almost 20 years for the number 30 spot to actually win the Rumble. You'd think, because, I mean, odds-wise, that's the best number to get is number 30.
Mm-hmm.
But 20 years? It's kind of interesting to think about it that way, really.
It happens, I guess.
So, anyways, let's go to number two. Both feet have to touch the ground, and this, of course, was the 1995 Royal Rumble. Now, on paper, it was one of the weakest cards with the least star power in the middle of the biggest drought in professional wrestling. The 1995 Royal Rumble didn't look too promising from the opening vignette, with which various stars of the WWF, like Mabel, Duke the Dumpster Drosy, Henry Godwin, Doink and Dink the Clown, were awaiting the arrival of Pamela Anderson. Yet, with any number of outside variables working against it, the 1995 Royal Rumble match produced what is easily one of the most memorable moments in Rumble history. Now, much like Flair a few years earlier, Shawn Michaels quickly fell out of favor when he drew the number one spot for the contest. The number two entry, the British Bulldog, was just as unlikely to win the contest. Now, fast forward to the end, and the final two were the two men who started it all. While both had eluded elimination several times in the last 30 minutes, neither was quite prepared for the way it would all go down. Bulldog, with his incredible strength advantage, launched the Heartbreak Kid from pillar to post until he was on the ropes, clinging to them by a moment. Now, Bulldog ran full steam at HBK, sending him barreling over the top rope in a move that signaled the end of the contest. Now, as Bulldog's music blared over the speakers in the arena, it was clear that Davey Boy was ready to celebrate his victory and potential future match against WWF Champion Diesel at WrestleMania 11. When Bulldog ascended to the middle rope of the turnbuckle to salute the fans, that's when it happened. Shawn Michaels delivered a double axe handle from behind, plummeting Bulldog over the top ropes and to the floor. Referee Earl Hebner would then hit the ring and raise Shawn Michaels' hand as the winner of the 1995 Royal Rumble match. In one of the most confusing, controversial, and incredible endings in Rumble history, ring announcer Howard Finkel explained, only one of Shawn Michaels' feet touched the floor. The slow motion replays captured by the WWF's camera crew validated the whole thing. And then from then on out, the WWE made it a point when explaining the rules of the match to put extra emphasis that both feet must touch the floor in order for an elimination to occur.
Which has made for many near finishes for some wrestlers at the Royal Rumble from there on out. Always exciting to have one foot touch the floor, but not two.
Yeah, Michael's going from number one all the way to the end.
That's right.
First one to do that.
That is true as well about that one. Yeah. So that'll bring us to our number one Royal Rumble moment.
And looking from behind. Oh, Justice got rid of Hulk. Uh-oh. I don't like the looks of things now. There are no friends. Only enemies. Oh, is Hulk upset. He said, you stole my belt.
What time?
And look at this. Hulk's there, holding on, trying to pull him out. It's Flair from behind. Oh, yes.
Flair
did it.
Yes. He did it.
Now, Corey, was there ever any doubt?
Yes, I told you, James. I told you.
Could he say that anymore?
Number one, Ric Flair becomes the man. Of course, this was at the 1992 Royal Rumble. Now, the 1992 Royal Rumble match, Corey, was the only one in history to have the WWF Championship itself as the prize, and it was one of the most stacked Rumble matches ever, featuring legends such as Hulk Hogan, Macho Man Randy Savage, Roddy Piper, The Undertaker, and Sid Vicious, as well as NWA legend Ric Flair. Now, having recently debuted in the WWF, Flair was given a platform at the Rumble to showcase just what a superstar he was, and I'm telling you, he grasped it with both hands. No one had won the match after drawing one of the early numbers before, and when Flair entered at number 3, it seemed he had zero chance of winning. Announcer Gorilla Monsoon frequently reminded color commentator and Flair associate Bobby Heenan that no one has entered in numbers 1 through 5 and been there at the end. Throughout the match, it seemed as if Flair had a target on his back, accentuated by his outsider status, and everyone seemed to focus their ire on him. Halfway through the match, Flair found himself alone in the ring, desperate for reprieve, when his sworn enemy Roddy Piper entered the contest and just went to town on the Nature Boy. Now, Flair's performance, combined with the openness of the Rumble match, the fantastic back-and-forth commentary of Monsoon and Heenan, and the huge stakes of having the world title on the line, made this perhaps the greatest Rumble match ever, certainly the best of the 20th century. Now, the end saw Flair indirectly aided by Hulk Hogan as he eliminated Sid Vicious to win the match and claim his first WWF title, making him truly the man in the professional wrestling business.
There you go. Like they say, and to be the man, you got to beat the man.
I mean, Flair cut one of the best promos. Do you remember that promo that he cut after with Bobby Heenan and Mr. Perfect standing behind him?
Yes, that
with a tear in my eye. This is the greatest moment of my life. A beautiful promo.
Yeah, but absolutely. Well, that is your top 5 Royal Rumble moments. You think we're going to top that this weekend, James?
It's to top Ric Flair, I don't know. It's pretty hard. You'd have to have the title on the line. But.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I mean, it could be surprising. I mean, it could be something no one expects.
Yeah, you're right.
And I would hope that they go that route this Sunday.
That's what makes the Royal Rumble match such a great match, is that it's got this level of unexpectedness that you really don't have anymore in professional wrestling. It's like the Royal Rumble is that one last true bastion of you don't know.
Yeah.
You just don't know what's going to happen. And that's, I don't know, I'm excited for Sunday, definitely.
The other thing I love about the Royal Rumble is that I can take anyone who isn't a wrestling fan and make them a wrestling fan for one day. Because if you can't get excited about the spontaneity of who's going to come out next every 3 or 4 minutes,
To me,
that is just such great entertainment for anyone, whether you're a wrestling fan or not. And
for sure the best pay-per-view to have your friends over for a party for next to WrestleMania.
And it's also one of the only pay-per-views of the year where you can actually place bets with people trying to figure out who's going to win the Royal Rumble.
You can bring money into it. Yeah. That's right. It's the only match you can really do that.
Yeah. So, well, this will just about wrap up another edition of Smack Talk Radio Live. I mean, I'm hoping the show sounds good on this new system. I guess we're about to find out.
We will find out. You know, I know we went over a little bit on time this week, but I mean, we had so much to cover, and with the Royal Rumble happening right around the corner here, you know, I feel that we really had to spend the proper amount of time just to break it all down.
So. This would be our longest show yet, but for good reason. Royal Rumble this Sunday from St. Louis, Missouri. I hope you enjoy it, everyone. My name is Corey Callahan.
I am James McDonald.
We'll see you on Monday for SRL on a Monday night. We're going to break down everything that happened at the Royal Rumble.
We're out.
Touch the flame where the sea